How much do you know about friction? You probably learned about it in physics class, but how much do you know about it in the context of business? Every large organization encounters friction, forces that make it harder, more complicated, or simply impossible to get things done. But there are ways you can overcome friction or use it to your own benefit. To explain how to do this, we're joined by Robert I. Sutton, co-author with Huggy Rao of The Friction Project, How Smart Leaders Make the Right Things Easier and the Wrong Things Harder. Robert is a Stanford professor, organizational researcher, and best-selling author. He was named one of 10 B-School All-Stars by Business Week and is an IDEO Fellow. Here he is to share five big ideas from the book.
Hi, I'm Bob Sutton. I'm co-author with Huggy Rao of The Friction Project, How Smart Leaders Make the Right Things Easier and the Wrong Things Harder. To give you a little context, this is the result of kind of a 15-year project that Huggy and I have been working on. We're interested in leading at scale, how leaders grow organizations, how they spread good things throughout them. And along the way, we got interested in how you lead organizations as they become larger, more complex, older. And in many of the companies that we worked with, there was all sorts of friction, frustration. People would complain about bureaucracy. They'd complain about too many emails, too many new projects. And so we started a series of case studies, academic research. We actually had something called the Friction Podcast for a year or so. And along the way, there were two main insights that I think are important to keep in mind. One was we started out sort of pessimistic, that maybe it was impossible to fight the inevitable bureaucracy, the inevitable sort of siloism, all the things that make it hard to get things done in organizations. But the good news was that we came upon all sorts of good things that leaders and organizations were doing to fight destructive friction. The second big insight that we had was that friction wasn't always bad. There was a lot of situations, for example, when people do creative work, when they want to make really difficult, irreversible decisions, and so on, when actually slowing down and making things more difficult was a good idea. So that's sort of the headline. Now what I want to do is to dig into five key insights from the book. Well, the first insight is sort of a mindset or a mission, is that when we see leaders and teams that are especially good about, if you will, making the right things easy and the wrong things hard, they have an attitude that we call the trustee's mindset. They see themselves as trustees of others' time. So just for example, in the book, we talk about one of our colleagues, Jeremy Utley. We were preparing a class for 60 executives, and Jeremy sort of stood up in the middle of the meeting and he said, "I hate wasting other people's time." That to me is just literally the embodiment of the trustee's mindset. And in the book, we talked about various, if you will, elements of the trustee's mindset. One I would focus on in particular is the notion that it's not a one and done situation. So we wrote an article about how Dropbox had this kind of amazing intervention where they removed standing meetings from everybody's calendar, and then they couldn't put the new meetings back in for about a week, and they made all these new rules and so forth that you should keep meetings as small as possible. You should even leave a meeting if it wasn't working. And they did reduce the number of unnecessary meetings, but by the time when we wrote it up, it was actually for Inc., we were talking to Drew Houston, the CEO, and we said, "How's it going?" He said, "It's worse than ever. It's like mowing the lawn. You've got to do it over and over again with discipline, or you never fix anything." So that's the first lesson, is this notion of adopting the trustee's mindset, and it's like mowing the lawn. It's a way of life. It's a discipline. Our second big sort of insight is the notion that when we see people who are really skilled, organizations that are really skilled at especially fighting bad friction, they adopt what we call the subtraction mindset. And in fact, this is not something that comes natural to human beings. A series of studies done by researchers from the University of Virginia shows that we as human beings, we're actually naturally prone to add things to make life more complex, to solve problems, anything from planning a vacation to fixing a Lego model to fixing a university. That's sort of our natural tendency. And also the organizations we studied make this problem worse by rewarding people who build fiefdoms, who start initiatives, who add software, and not rewarding people who reduce complexity. That's the bad news. The good news is that there's a whole bunch of things in the organizations that we studied that people do to live the subtraction mindset. A great example, at Hawaii Pacific Medical, which is the largest healthcare system in Hawaii, there was a woman named Dr. Melinda Ashton, and she was concerned about all of the excessive time that doctors, nurses, and so forth were spending on the electronic patient record system as opposed to focusing on patients directly. And so she started something she called the Get Rid of Stupid Stuff campaign and had people make suggestions from throughout the system of parts of the electronic record system that could be subtracted or made more simple. As she described it, as parts that were poorly designed, unnecessary, or just plain stupid. People in the system suggested 188 subtraction targets, and her team actually made 87 improvements. And there was one, just to give you one little example, they eliminated one mouse click that was made for every patient as nurses and nurse assistants were making rounds. And just that one little click they removed, it saved 24 seconds per click and approximately 1,700 nursing hours per month at their four hospitals. So that's our second lesson, embrace the subtraction mindset. Our third lesson is to watch your language, to avoid using what Huggy and I call jargon monoxide. And our argument is that all sorts of destructive friction is caused when people routinely use language that's overly complex or incomprehensible. And just to give you one little example, we describe in the book the jargon mishmash syndrome. The jargon mishmash syndrome is when a certain kind of language or phrase means so many things to so many different people that it actually is meaningless. And we're kind of taking a cue from Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman. He talks about noise being a really big problem when it comes to figuring out what is the correct action. So he would describe noise as a random scatter of ideas. And the example that we use in the Friction Project to illustrate noise is a speech that was given by an Australian agile consultant. And what this fellow did, he was very proud. You can find this on the web. He was able to give a 40-minute speech where he went through 40 different kinds of agile and everything from holacracy to scrum to deming, all these different things that, frankly, I've never heard of. And my perspective is that if under the tent of agile, there's 40 different meanings of the word agile, it means 40 different things at least to different people. So therefore, it means nothing. And when you get in a situation where, if you will, the jargon mishmash syndrome, the only solution Huggy and I can think of is, since there's not going to be some all-powerful jargon police, you just sort of got to kind of stop using it. And my advocacy is let's stop using the word agile because it means so many things to so many people that it means nothing. Our fourth lesson from the Friction Project is about situations where friction is good. So friction fixers, they not only try to banish bad friction, they look at things that ought to be difficult, slow, or impossible. And just to give you one key example, if you look at research on creativity, there's a very strong argument, and Teresa Mabile from Harvard Business School is probably the leading person here who's done this research, that as she puts it, when you put creativity under the gun and you start rushing people, all sorts of bad things happen because if you dig into research on creativity, it's a fundamentally inefficient process. It entails a lot of dead ends, a lot of failure. actually constructive conflicts, a lot of sort of arguing, and that's if you're doing it right. So the lesson here is Jerry Seinfeld, the famous comedian and co-creator of the famous TV show Seinfeld, says, when it comes to comedy, the hard way is the right way. There's no natural way to make it efficient. When he prepares a show, he will try hundreds and hundreds of jokes, and maybe 1 or 2% will survive. So that's our third or our fourth lesson, is that when it comes to many things in life, they should be slow, difficult, complicated, and you got to kind of slow down, and you're not going to make them efficient. Okay, so that leads us to our last lesson about friction fixing. And one of the things that we've learned in the process of watching what it takes to fix friction, the best leaders are kind of two minds. Their first perspective is they're really focused on being good organizational designers, on doing things like removing bad procedures, making, say, unethical or dumb things impossible to do. So they're constantly thinking about ways to clean up the mess, the organization design, but they also are of another mind, which is they know that in many cases there will be procedures, there will be laws, there will be rules, there'll actually be different, difficult stretches where people are confused. And like all organizational life, being a friction fixer means being in messy situations. So what great leaders do, and the person we quote in the book, her name is Clara Shai. She's the CEO of AI at Salesforce, amazingly accomplished woman. And she says that when she launches something new, she tells people that they've got to embrace the mess. And she uses this approach. She calls it separation of concerns, which is from computer science, which is that she essentially has one team that focuses on implementing things that are working and going well. And she has another team whose job is to sort of try to clean up the mess. So that's our final insight when it comes to friction fixing, that you as a leader, as a friction fixer, as a trustee of others' time, you kind of got to do two things at once, help people clean up the mess, and at the same time, keep them moving ahead, even though things are difficult. So I'm Bob Sutton. I'm co-author of The Friction Project, How Smart Leaders Make the Right Things Easier and the Wrong Things Harder, with my buddy Huggy Rao. And I hope you enjoyed our little book bite.
Thank you, Bob. That was five big ideas from The Friction Project, How Smart Leaders Make the Right Things Easier and the Wrong Things Harder, by Robert I. Sutton and Huggy Rao. You might also like our book bite for The Six Disciplines of Strategic Thinking, Leading Your Organization into the Future, by Michael Watkins. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.